Welcome to Reflections and Wonders, Revisiting Luke's Gospel, a podcast that's just me wondering off the top of my head about Luke's Gospel for the second time in 3 years. My name is Norm Seeley, and I'm a minister at Jubilee United Church in Toronto, Canada. I've been a minister for over 30 years, and every year my thoughts and wonderings change. So, Monday to Friday, I'll be reading my way through Luke, even though I read through Luke in 2021. But the thing is, the world's changed. I've changed, and so I expect that my wonderings will have changed as well. I don't have notes, and I haven't checked back to see what I said 3 years ago, but I am kind of looking forward to hearing what I say now. Or more importantly, what I think God may be saying to me now. I do want to thank Drew Winters for the music and you for joining me. I will do my best to keep my wanderings between 18 and 30 minutes, but every once in a while we may go a couple minutes long. You should also know that this is an audio version of a video blog that I will have recorded 2 weeks ago. So, if you want to see what I look like when I'm wandering, well, you can find me on my YouTube channel. Just search Norm Seeley. That's Norm Seeley, S-E-L-I. Or even easier, find me on the Jubilee United Church website, www.jubileeunited.ca. And if you want to support this and other digital ministries of Jubilee United Church, well, you can make a donation through canadahelps.org. We are Jubilee United Church, the one in Ontario. So now, let's see what Luke has to say this time around. Today we're in Luke chapter 14, verses 7 to 14. We started the chapter with Jesus being invited into the home of a Pharisee, where there was a man with dropsy. Now, before Jesus healed him, he asked the folks there, Pharisees, scribes, dinner guests, whether they thought it was okay to heal on the Sabbath. They had no answer. He healed and then appealed to them, saying, you know, if you had a child who fell into a well, but it was the Sabbath, would you not save the child, or would you wait? Again, they didn't answer, but Jesus put it in different terms that they could possibly understand, in terms of love, justice, emotion, the things that you do, how close people are. I mean, it's one thing to have a Sabbath rule that is cold and dispassionate. This is the rule. It's another thing to be committed in love to people, to your neighbors, to your... and then have that love affect the way you read the rules. That's kind of how I was with it yesterday. Anyway, and then we move on. So here it is. It's Luke 14, verses 7 to 14. When Jesus noticed how the guests chose the places of honor, he told them a parable. When you are invited by someone to a wedding banquet, do not sit down at the place of honor, in case someone more distinguished than you has been invited by your host. And the host who invited both of you may come and say to you, give this person your place. And then in disgrace, you would start to take the lowest place. But when you're invited, go and sit at the lowest place. So then when your host comes, he may say to you, friend, come, move up higher. And then you'll be honored in the presence of all who sit at the table with you. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, and all those who humble themselves will be exalted. And he also said to the one who had invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, do not invite your friends or your brothers or your relatives or rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you would be repaid. But when you give a banquet, invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind, and you will be blessed, because they cannot repay you. For you will be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. So, I'm assuming Jesus is still at the home of this Pharisee. We've healed the man with dropsy. They haven't said much, and now he's looking around and realizing that people have taken their positions of honor. And I mean, I think most of us understand that. You know, someone who sits at the head of the table, they're meant to sit at the head of the table. In my house, very often when we're having a formal meal, I sit at the head of the table because it's my table. I suppose it's that habit. The truth is, the other side of the table is. Well, it's easier to get to the kitchen and the food and all the stuff. And frankly, by the time we get to dinner, I'm probably in charge of pouring wine at this point. My wife knows what's going on with the kitchen, so it works out better. But every now and again, just for fun, we'll mix it up, and I'll sort of sit in the middle of the table, and I'll invite somebody else to sit at the head of the table. And it's funny. They go like, oh, no, that's where you're supposed to sit. I didn't tell them that, but we have this idea that there's, you know, the head of the table, that's where, that's a position of honor or responsibility, whatever it is. Well, the further you get away from the head of the table, in the example Jesus is giving, the further you get away, the less honor you have. All right, so if you were having a dinner party, and you had two special guests, and they were the reason for the party. Oh, we're having the so-and-sos. They've just won a Nobel Prize and come back to town. We're having a dinner for them. They would sit in the position of honor. So they might sit right next to whoever's at the head of the table, the founder of that feast, as it were. And then you work your way down. The most important up near the head, and then some people who are just neighbors and kind of seat fillers there sitting down towards the bottom. You get all of that, right? And so do the people who are hearing this from Jesus. Now, it's called a parable because we're meant to reflect on it. That's how I treat parables. And the meaning can change from time to time. Now, he couches it in very human terms in that think of the great reward you'll get, right? So if you take a position of privilege at the table, but then someone with greater standing comes, then you'll be embarrassed when you have to move down, scooch over, as it were. You'll be embarrassed. That's sort of what Jesus appeals to. So when you don't want to be shamed. You don't want to be embarrassed. But if you go and sit at the bottom, well, then the most that's going to happen is you're invited to move further up. And so you will be honored in front of everybody. So it's appealing to a very basic human thing. Say, yeah, I like it when people invite me. I mean, I have been upgraded when I've been flying across the Atlantic, and to be upgraded into business class, love it. Love it for the comfort also. Little ego thing. Oh, gosh, for a moment, I feel like I'm James Bond. yes, because spies always fly business class. Anyway, the point is, it is nice when you get upgraded. It feels good. It feels bad when you get downgraded. Right, and that's basically what Jesus is saying. So do that. But it's not just about the feeling of being upgraded and downgraded. For all who exalt themselves will be humbled, he says, and all who humble themselves will be exalted. A chiasm, where it crosses over, right? The last will be first, the first shall be last. Those who exalt themselves will be humbled, and those who humble themselves will be exalted. When we exalt ourselves, when we puff ourselves up, when we tell people how amazing we are, ultimately, somewhere along the way, we will be humbled. We'll be humbled because we tend to have an inflated view of ourselves. And the more we keep promoting ourselves, the more likely it is that someone's going to burst that bubble. And that's going to be hard for us. But when we humble ourselves, we're not doing our own PR work. We're not talking ourselves up, right? And so, in a sense, I think we're much more open to what others are saying and to what God is saying. If I'm busy telling you how great I am, I'm not really listening to what God is asking me to do. And the great thing about it, see, when God asks me to do something, God is usually appealing to abilities and gifts that I have that I may not know I have or may not thought I needed to use right now. But as I listen to what God asks me to do and I do it, I find myself falling into a wonderful pattern. It feels good, better than just being upgraded. I feel I'm in connection with what God is saying. And I am exalted in the company I'm keeping, because look at this, I'm following God's will. But as long as I'm exalting myself, I'm only listening to me. At least that's been my experience. I had moments when my swagger was perhaps more than it should be. And there's nothing wrong with being, I don't believe there's anything wrong with being aware of your abilities and proud of your achievements. But when you are exalting yourself, which is to me is a lifting, a bragging, then you're not really listening closely anymore. You're too busy trying to find the words to tell people how important you are, as opposed to listening to what is God inviting you to do into this moment. And I find that when I'm listening to what God invites me into, then in ways that it's hard to describe, in those ways I'm exalted. I have rarely had that feeling of being in the right place at the right time because I imagined myself there. But I have followed what I felt was God calling me. And I've gone into places and I have felt like I was in the right place at the right time. And that is a joy in and of itself. There was an exaltation in that. So yeah, this is why I'm here. And on the selfish point of view, and sometimes years later, people who were there at that time will say, Norm, I was so glad that you were there for me. I was really glad when this happened and you were there. You offered this thing that we needed. And so there is that exaltation that comes later, but not out of me. I'm trying to think of other ways that I could engage with this parable, because again, I think that parables are meant to be dynamic, but at this moment, I'm simply seeing myself as a guest, and because it's addressed to me as if I were a guest, and recognizing that, yes, sometimes I might, I don't know that I would go and take the top spot, the greatest place of honor, but I probably don't think to sit myself down at the children's table either. But maybe I'm meant to. Huh. It's also got me thinking. And it ties in. So I mentioned the children's table. I don't know your tradition, but you know, when we would have large family gatherings, Thanksgiving, Christmas, Easter, that kind of thing, someone's birthdays would align, or there'd be a big family gathering, there was the adult table and the children's table. Children had their own table because, well, there wasn't room around the big table for everybody. Kids had shorter attention spans. Kids maybe didn't want to be part of the adult conversation. They want to have their own conversation. And so you went to the children's table, which I can remember very well. We had a table that was lower, had little chairs. We were little kids. We sat at the children's table. And then later that turned into a card table, and we would sit there as sort of teenagers. And then there was a time when I started to feel really ticked off that I was at the children's table. Seriously? Why am I at the children's table was the lesser table. So, when Jesus tells me to sit at the children's table, you know, if you come to this great big banquet, go and sit at the children's table. Chances are you're going to be sitting with people you've never met before. You're not going to be sitting with the usual people. You are also going to bring a certain cachet to that children's table because you aren't expected to sit at the children's table. You're not a child. It's a way of making those who are assigned to the children's table to make them feel more included. You become a bridge in that sense because you belong at the adult table, but you're sitting at the children's table, which is to help break down that distinction between children's tables and adults' tables, right? Those with at this table and those without at that table. You help break down that barrier because if you belong at the one but choose to sit at the other, you have broken that barrier. And so others may do the same thing. Can I imagine Jesus inviting me to break down barriers? And yeah, I can. And I can imagine this parable helping me do that. So it's not necessarily about a dinner or a table. It's just about being in new company, sitting with people that you wouldn't normally sit with, foregoing your place of honor that you might actually be in a new place and meet new people, hear new things, new perspectives. Which of course then feeds right into the second one. He said to the one who'd invited him, when you give a luncheon or a dinner, don't invite your friends or brothers or relatives or rich neighbors in case they may invite you in return and you'd be repaid. No. Invite the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Again, I don't think that Jesus is talking about anyone in specific. He is using them as general terms, which we can have an issue about, but for now we'll just let it sit this way. But the idea is to, when you invite, when you have a banquet, invite people that you don't normally invite. And on one hand, invite those who aren't getting invited to as many banquets. Invite the marginalized. Here he said the poor, the crippled, the lame, and the blind. Those are recognizable groups. We might have a different group of people who are marginalized, not generally invited to our tables, not included. And so the idea is, no, invite them. Invite them. On one hand, I suppose, well, because we're supposed to care about each other. Yes. Maybe it's invite your enemies, because we're supposed to love our enemies. Remember, Jesus has been invited to this table, and it's hard to say what his relationship with all the Pharisees is. I think it's good with some and not good with others. So, yeah, invite that person who others might say don't invite. Don't have them. No, but actually do invite them. That's what I hear Jesus saying. I don't think Jesus is saying invite your ex to your wedding. But I do think Jesus is saying invite new people and invite a range of people. Because it occurs to me when he does that whole repaid thing, right? So if you know, don't invite your brothers, your relatives, rich neighbors, in case they may invite you in return and you'd be repaid. I don't think he's saying you can't have them. He's saying don't have them exclusively. I mean, I don't think Jesus is going to say to me, don't ever eat with your family. I think I'm allowed to eat with my family. Don't ever invite your neighbors in if they're rich. No, I don't think that's a problem. But if I do that exclusively, what happens is I invite them to my home, and then they invite me to theirs. And so there's a quid pro quo that goes on. And I do that with my brother, and then my brother invites me to his house. And so pretty soon we have this little group where we are inviting each other into each other's homes. Meanwhile, the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind aren't being invited to anybody's home. They're being left out. We are creating a clique. We are becoming a privileged group who is no longer connected to the others. It's not necessarily about the charity of inviting the poor as much as it is about making sure that you don't become too insular. If you only see the same people, only invite the same folk to dinner, you won't grow. I don't know how you feel about this, but to me, this is the very thing that social media algorithms do, which is why I find it hard at times. YouTube does it, certainly. Google does it. Facebook does it. All those places that exist, you know, they say, oh, you like this? Then you're going to love this. And so they keep sending me things that will, well, either outrage me because they want that engagement too, but mostly they send me things that I will, with which I will be familiar and comfortable. So when I go onto my YouTube, when I go on YouTube, there are all of these channels that are very, very similar. I get lots of stuff from British panel shows, because I like British panel shows. I get lots of comedies of the same style. I get lots of political commentary, but all that political commentary is pretty much from one perspective. In fact, I find it quite jarring when I find somebody from another point of view, and I go, ooh, you produce videos too? yeah, they do, but we only listen to the ones, you know, that are being sent to us. So we are exactly that. We're inviting our rich friends, our brothers to dinner, and they're inviting us to. And so we only ever really hear each other. And I'll tell you, my experience is if you get 10 people and you keep talking to each other for a month, you begin to think that everybody is saying what you're saying. Well, I know, but everybody in the group is absolutely convinced of this or against that. So that's what's trending in the world right now. No, it's not. It's trending in your group. The algorithms are feeding you those things, and you begin to believe that everybody thinks like you do. But in fact, there's a variety of opinions, thoughts, and ideas out there, and I hear Jesus asking us to be attentive to that. It's not just about including those who aren't included. It's about getting out of the trap of only being with people like yourself. So you hear new perspectives, new ideas, new things to wonder about. My son arrives tomorrow. Haven't seen him since January last, so 15 months, 15, 16 months since I've seen him in person, and I'm very excited to see him. Famously, he and I love a good argument, and to the point where other people then start to feel uncomfortable and they have to leave because I think that there's enmity between us, and there isn't. We just really love a good argument. It's our thing. We're learning to tone that down around other people, not to frighten them, but we love that argument. I am so happy he's coming because we see things differently, and I am anxious to hear his perspective. I'm not afraid that he's going to show up. It's like, oh, we don't agree on anything. What are we going to talk about? No, it's we disagree on a number of things. I can't wait to hear what he's thinking. That, to me, is what Jesus is inviting me into. Inviting different people to my table. Now, if I come from a particularly privileged group, then I should be looking for some of those people who fall outside of those areas of privilege. So, the poor, the crippled, the lame, the blind. Absolutely. If Jesus was sitting with a group of people, in a parking lot somewhere, and they were sharing a bag of chips because that's what they could afford, and they were in a variety of different physical abilities, disabilities, all there, I think Jesus would be saying to them, "Listen, whenever you get together to share a bag of crisps, invite a cop. Invite one of those rich people. Invite your great uncle who doesn't have anything to do with you. Invite other people so you can hear from them as well." If he was with a group that are all on the left, he would tell them to invite people from the right. If he was the people who are all on the right, he'd invite them. He'd encourage them to invite people who are from the left. This idea that we need to hear from each other and recognize that we are all of us children of God. We are siblings, even though we don't agree. Our relationship is not based on our agreement. Our relationship is actually based on our creation. God created us together, and we need to mine that. We need to grow into that. We need to discover that connection. Because that's how we learn more about the world, learn more about ourselves, learn more about God, when we listen to others. Now, the last line could be used to say, "See, Norm, you're wrong." Because the last line is, "You'll be blessed because they cannot repay you." So the idea is, yes, definitely invite the poor. "You'll be repaid at the resurrection of the righteous." Which sounds like, you know what? Invite those poor sons of guns and not to worry. You'll get your reward in heaven. Repaid at the resurrection of the righteous. Fair interpretation of those words. I absolutely get it. However, repaid to me is reward. You will get your reward. Not repaid. Oh, well, you spent that much money on a dinner for that poor blind fellow who didn't agree with you. Here you go. There's your money. Thanks for giving me the receipts. It's not that. It's not repaid. It's you'll be rewarded. You'll be rewarded at the resurrection of the righteous. Now, if you believe that we die and that those who are chosen by God, who have lived into their faith appropriately, are then resurrected into heaven while the others remain moldering, then yeah, okay, then that sentence makes sense. If, however, like me, you're more of a universalist and believe that life beyond this life is for everyone, that Jesus has made us aware of it in his life, death, and resurrection, but sort of hasn't necessarily put up a, like, well, you have to agree with these rules or, you know, it doesn't work. That's me. I'm a universalist. So when I hear repaid at the resurrection of the righteous, what I hear is that your reward comes when we are, in a sense, all together. Righteous means right with God. Not holier than thou, right with God. So when I am right with God, well, when I hear other perspectives and other ideas, when I broaden my community instead of trying to tighten it up, right? When I no longer live in a gated community, But in fact, I have a community where people come and go, and I meet a variety of folks. When I do that, I am, in my experience and in my estimation, I am more in keeping with God's will. I'm connecting with more of God's creation. So I am connected with God, and that is a reward. Yeah, I love feeling that connection. But even more than that, I look around at all those others who are also aligned with God, and they weren't necessarily who I was expecting, but I am really glad to be in their company. The reward for the resurrection of the righteous is when you're following God's will to recognize that you are in good company and to revel in that. You've met new friends. It's a good thing. So for me, this isn't, if you don't do it, you're not going to get a heavenly reward. For me, this is, no, as you do this, the reward is evident because you are in such good company. You are reborn. You are working with, in line with, coordinated with, in harmony with those who are also trying to do God's will. And it's a great feeling. That sounded preachy, which is a good reason for me to stop. I'm going to leave it where it is right now and offer a prayer and let you make of it what you will as the day goes on. So let us pray. Loving God, thank you. Thank you for parables that speak to us on many levels. Our most basic human level to be exalted and not to be shamed, but at a deeper level as well, that invites us to open ourselves up to each other and to the world around us and discover you and to understand more and more about your character, your will, your love in the world. God, we ask that everything that we wonder about today, we ask that all of it reveal your word and that as we hear your word, we grow in faith. We pray in the name of your Son, Jesus Christ, through the Holy Spirit. Amen. That is enough for me today, but I look forward to seeing you. I guess it'll be Monday. We got a weekend in front of us. So please have a wonderful weekend. And until I get to see you, God bless you. Please know that God sees you, knows you, and loves you exactly where you are, exactly as you are. And that God's love doesn't just stop with you. It moves through you into the world in amazing, wonderful ways. You really do matter. You share God's love. We'll see you on Monday.